Welcome to Transition, Gadgets 360's gaming and pop culture podcast. In today's episode, we are going to be talking about Deadpool 2 and E3 2018. So this is going to be a two-part episode. Just stay tuned. If you want to listen to the discussion about Deadpool 2, then scroll ahead, skip ahead to 26 minutes and 30 seconds on this podcast. Alright, in this segment, we are going to be speaking about E3 2018, which is probably the biggest or the second biggest gaming show, depending on which side of the fence you are in. And in this, we do see a whole bunch of announcements. And as usual, since we are 1 month away from E3, there have been so many leaks that we are sort of, you know, swamped with news pieces and all. So to talk about all of these E3 2018 leaks, which includes a bunch of games that you may not have expected, we have our games editor, Rishi Albani.
Good morning, evening or night. And yeah, this year, E3 is the biggest show. The other one's Gamescom. And I think it has to do with the fact that all the major announcements will happen this year, at least will happen there first before Gamescom.
Cool. So friend of the podcast, Mikhail Madnani, is also here.
Yes.
From what I understand, there was a Walmart Canada leak, right? They showed a page which was not supposed to be live, went live, and somebody took a screenshot. And that screenshot shows a whole bunch of games that are listed for pre-order. And this sort of hints at the fact that they are going to be announced at E3. Now, even though they tried to salvage the situation by saying that, hey, look, it's probably like just speculation and this and that, one of the games got confirmed right after, and that is Rage 2.
Yeah, so usually what happens is, to give you readers a background on how these leaks actually happen and why they usually tend to be accurate. Now, what usually happens is a game publisher, a game company, like let's say, will give a retailer a list of games every quarter saying, hey, this is what's going to be coming out in the next year. This is what you should be putting up for pre-order. And it's on the basis of these pre-orders and the listings that the retailer, like in this case, Walmart, would decide how much quantity of each game to bring in. So from their standpoint, and with a lot of the games business going digital in the sense that with you buying games online, even if they're physical product, you're buying them online, it's easier for retailers to decide how much quantity they should take so that they don't, you know, overstock on certain games or not bring in other games at all. It helps them gauge demand. So what's happened here is Walmart pulled the trigger a little early and decided to list a bunch of games that haven't been announced yet.
Yeah, little means 1 month early.
Yeah, and these include titles such as Rage 2, which just got confirmed a couple of days ago, Just Cause 4, which incidentally, if true, which I'm pretty sure it is, will probably share the same developer as Rage 2, Avalanche Software.
Well, the same studio. Different teams under Avalanche.
Yep. And there was another game, Division 2, which we already knew about. There was Final Fantasy VII Remake, but for the Xbox One, which is very interesting for a couple of reasons. One, it's really optimistic to think that Final Fantasy VII Remake will come out in this generation of consoles, considering the game's gone through development hell, and that they moved development from an external studio, CyberConnect 2, back to Square Enix internally, and they're putting a team together. Why this is also interesting is because when Final Fantasy VII Remake was first announced to the world, it was announced to be first on PlayStation. And this was announced at E3 2015, colloquially known as the E3 of dreams for many, because there was Final Fantasy VII, there was Shenmue, and
Last Guardian.
There's Last Guardian, all three which were shown off at the PlayStation conference. Another game which is also on that list was Gears of War 5, which is interesting because for those of you who've played Gears of War 4, it ends on a bit of a cliffhanger note. And the game visually still one of the most stunning games this generation. And it would be logical for the developer Coalition to follow it up with the second game. But considering how well the multiplayer is still doing on Gears of War 4, it's interesting to see that we might see a sequel this year. In addition to this, there are other titles also on that list, like Dragon Quest II for Xbox One, which our resident Dragon Quest expert Mike tells us is...
So basically, Dragon Quest 2, there are two listings. One is Dragon Quest 2 for PS4 and one is Dragon Quest 2 for Xbox One. Now, when we say there are listings, what happens is, in a lot of cases, when there's no placeholder box art, retailers will use a black image and they'll just put the text of the title on the cover as placeholder box art until the publisher reveals the final box art. In this case... While Dragon Quest 2 does exist on PS4 in Japan, it's just a port of the original game remade in Unity. It's kind of like a repackaged version of the mobile game, which is except to be played in landscape mode. It was released on 3DS and PS4 in Japan. What this likely is, Dragon Quest Builders 2. Dragon Quest Builders 2 is the follow-up to Dragon Quest Builders, which originally came out on PS4, Vita, and then Switch. Dragon Quest Builders 2 is coming out this year in Japan on PS4 and Switch. So the fact that it was listed for Xbox One in the Walmart Canada listing, there are two possibilities over here. One is it was a mistake on their part and it's actually supposed to be PS4 and Switch being listed, or it's actually not listed for Switch yet, but it will come to Xbox One and obviously PC as well, which means Square Enix is getting serious about Dragon Quest Builders as a separate spin-off IP, and they'd bring that to Xbox One. Now, before going into a big tangent over here, I'd like to say one thing, that it'll be weird if Dragon Quest Builders 2 shows up on Xbox One when the actual mainline Dragon Quest game, Dragon Quest 11, is not showing up on Xbox One, considering it's basically an Unreal Engine 4 or Unreal Engine 3. I can't remember which one, but it's an Unreal Engine release which is coming to PC and PS4. It would be much easier to port that to Xbox One than Dragon Quest Builders, which uses one of Sony's proprietary engines, which also supports other platforms, but it's not as easy to work with as Unreal Engine. So I have a feeling that's a mistake, or if it is true, then it'll likely come to every platform. So, yeah.
Yeah, other additions to that list was the erroneously named Forza Horizon 5, considering that, the last game was Forza Horizon 3. So unless there is some form of logic that we're unaware of, the next game will be Forza Horizon 4. Another addition is also Splinter Cell. Now, there's been a lot of buzz around the Splinter Cell franchise. For those of you who are unaware, Splinter Cell is a stealth action series that debuted in 2000-2001 on the original Xbox. It was a timed Xbox exclusive before coming to PC and PS2. It was known for its really tight stealth gameplay, an assortment of gadgets and cool stuff to use. The last game was Splinter Cell Blacklist, which released on last generation consoles and PC. And is one of the surprisingly better looking games. It still holds up quite well today. One of the key people behind the Splinter Cell series, Clint Hawking, has come back to Ubisoft. He moved from Ubisoft to Valve and then was at Amazon. Now he's back at Ubisoft. And we won't be surprised to see him working on a reboot or a new game in the Splinter Cell series. Another game also on that list, which has been talked about extensively in the past by the game's developers, was Borderlands 3. Randy Pitchford has said in the past that after Battleborn Ships, which was their MOBA meets first-person shooter slash Overwatch clone, that pretty much bombed last year. He said after the development of Battleborn, most of the team will be working on a game that everyone's been looking forward to. And it's no doubt to be Borderlands 3. The first two games did really well. And Super Smash Bros. 3 makes sense because Nintendo said that their E3 conference this year will be focused around that game. And it's also important to note for Nintendo that they plan to launch an online service in September. So to talk about a game that will use online connectivity and a game in a popular franchise at that makes perfect sense. So yeah, I mean, there are no doubts on that one. Other listings include Dreams, which is, a game from Media Molecule, the developers of the Little Big Planet franchise, at least the main developers in the Little Big Planet franchise, which seemed to be in development hell for a while, but it seems to have a listing, so there's a chance we might see more about it at E3. And there's even a listing for Beyond Good and Evil 2.
Which is a complete joke. There's no way that game is going to ship anytime soon.
So that's an... here's the thing. The developers have shown off pre-alpha footage, which looks pretty decent. But at the same time, they've shown off pre-alpha footage and they want the community to chime in on what should be in the game. That's I don't know what to say.
I think it's a bit too early for a pre-order.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be like one of those Red Dead Redemption 2 pre-orders, which are like in pre-order forever. And then finally, 3 years later, the game shows up as like an actual thing.
It's coming October 26th. They're not going to miss the date. Because you know what would be really hilarious, right? Red Dead Redemption 2 says October 26th. Rockstar announces a delay in October. Imagine how many publishers would be extremely angry that they had to delay their release to a quarter later or a few months later. Activision would be kicking themselves for announcing Black Ops 4 on October 12 when they could have done November like they usually do, and maybe ship it with a single player campaign. But here's the thing. a lot of these listings, year on year, we keep seeing retailers list games prior to E3. Last year, Amazon had listed Wolfenstein 2 and The Crew 2 prior to their announcements, and they showed up. Earlier also, we've seen Amazon and other retailers list Spyro before an initial announcement, and yes, it showed up.
Yeah, so there's like a key disclaimer here. Like, they showed up at E3. Yeah, did not ship.
So yeah, that's the thing. Spyro wasn't an E3 thing. It was just a regular announcement.
Yeah, I mean, also about Crew 2.
Crew 2 is going to be out this year. It got delayed once. Wolfenstein showed up on time. But then more often than not, all of this follows one very basic fact. A retailer will not list anything unless they've been told about it by the publisher. That is usually how it works. Retailers aren't interested in trolling people who show up at their site to give them money. So, which is why there's a good chance that most of this is true. And from them, I mean, the most likely candidates seem to be, I mean, outside from those that we already know of, like The Division 2 and Beyond Good and Evil 2. Outside of these, the most likely candidates are Gears of War, Borderlands, Just Cause, and possibly Assassin's Creed, that's listed as well. You know, to capitalize on the hype over Origins, which is surprisingly good. So, yeah.
Yeah, so the most likely thing over there is probably Forza Horizon 5?
4.
In the Xbox world, the numbers don't make any sense. Xbox One...
No, they'll call it Forza Horizon Best Engagement Edition.
Yeah.
No, but yeah, I'd say Forza. I'd definitely say Forza. Probably yeah. Gears as well, because from a strategic standpoint, let's be honest, it's become a running joke. If you're buying the Xbox One, you're buying it for every reason but the exclusives. And it's something that hopefully Phil Spencer can rectify. Hopefully. But we'll know sooner than E3. But that seems likely to me.
Mm.
And the other thing is, I mean, Borderlands also seems like a possibility considering it's been talked about for so long and we haven't seen a sequel to Borderlands 2 just yet. So
I don't know. I'm looking forward to hopefully, like, if this actually happens and we see FF7 remake at the Microsoft conference, it'll be FF13 all over again.
Yeah.
It'll be hilarious. And the funny thing is, the wording on the reveal just said play it first on PS4. Now, if you look at it that way, it could be a demo releases first on PS4 that still lets you play it first on PS4. So it wasn't like, you know, coming only to PS4 first or console launch exclusive, all those buzzwords Microsoft like throwing around. So, but I definitely think if it was timed exclusive for like 6 months to a year, there would be no listing on Xbox One. The version wouldn't be acknowledged until the exclusivity period was ending. So this likely points to it being PS4, Xbox, and obviously PC, because Square Enix is not going to release on just PS4, Xbox right now. And yeah, it'll be really funny. But then honestly, don't expect this. Be optimistic to hope this shows up before 2020 at this stage. So.
Yeah, I mean, Final Fantasy Remake aside, I just went through the listing once more. And it turns out I was correct earlier. Assassin's Creed is listed. They're not saying if it's a new title. So there are two listings for Assassin's Creed. One for an Origins pack, which I mean, seems like a Game of the Year edition kind of thing. And just a game labeled as Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, but they'll probably ship it too. You never know with Ubisoft,
I mean,
with Assassin's Creed.
I'm a little disappointed because if that's true, it would possibly mean that there's no Watch Dogs 3 this year, and I really liked Watch Dogs 2.
I liked Watch Dogs 2, yeah. Watch Dogs 1 was pretty bad.
Hey, Watch Dogs 1 was good.
It was almost as boring as playing Sleeping Dogs. Yes, I went there. So, yeah.
You have no taste. That's another story for another time. But I kind of liked both games. And, I mean, hopefully this is wrong because I want Watch Dogs 3 and not another Assassin's Creed game. Because, I mean, as Pranay said earlier, we just had Origins. And to be honest, to get to the end of Origins core game, you're spending at least, what, 30, 40 hours. So for them to just churn out another one, I mean, yes, it's been Ubisoft's agenda for this entire generation. But
take a break.
Soon.
Seriously.
Yeah.
But
just take a break.
Origins came out in 2016, right?
17.
No. Oh, 17. I'm already losing track of time.
That's called the bleeding effect from the Animus.
So I don't, I honestly would hope it's Watch Dogs because Watch Dogs did come out before Assassin's Creed Origins. You know, maybe this might turn out to just be a Origins complete edition with everything on disc or stuff because they've done that with Watch Dogs in the past where Watch Dogs 1 complete edition had everything on disc. So Origins could be all the DLC included and everything together.
So, I mean, that theory is sound, but the only issue is, so there are two listings for Assassin's Creed here. One is Assassin's Creed, just Assassin's Creed. And another one that says Assassin's Creed Origins Ace Helix Edition. And that's going for around $67 Canadian.
Yeah, that's
versus the Assassin's Creed listing, which is $80 Canadian.
So the Assassin's Creed Ace Helix thing is just it's a pack of microtransaction or in-game currency.
All right.
It's not an actual listing for the game. So this Assassin's Creed listing could still be its own thing, but I don't know, if Ubisoft doesn't do Watch Dogs, I feel like they'll do an Assassin's Creed. They'll do one of them this year, according to me.
Yeah, and rumors have suggested that the next Assassin's Creed game will take place in Greece, which makes perfect sense if you've finished Origins.
Oh, I thought it was because Kratos left Greece.
Oh, yeah, that too. I mean, yeah, it makes perfect sense. I agree completely. Considering the lore is all connected and everyone's basically the ancestor of Agent 47, yeah, makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and the Matrix.
Believe. So point is, rumor has it that it will take place in Greece, which makes perfect sense given how Origins panned out. Let's not go into spoiler territory, but yeah, makes perfect sense. It would also make sense considering which protagonist they might want to focus on. So yeah, I'm not saying anymore.
And another interesting thing I noticed of the leak is obviously 2K has their yearly sports franchises coming out this time. NBA is listed for PS4, Xbox and Switch physical, which means NBA 2K18 clearly did well for them. It was a great port as well and yeah, seems to have done well. But WWE 2K19 is not listed for Switch. Now, this could mean it's being released physically later on Switch, or the fact that they literally released a broken piece of garbage in the form of WWE 2K18 on Switch, which is still unplayable in almost every game mode, unless you can tolerate what would make Arkham Origins on PC feel like the best port in the world. Yeah, I don't think WWE is coming to Switch this time if we go by this listing.
I don't know. I think it's just a question of it coming later. Because as Mike suggested, yes, WWE on Switch was really, really bad. But also there's a reason for it. The WWE 2K games don't have as much manpower behind them as the NBA series.
Not yet, at least, sadly.
Yes, which is why you have issues with the roster, which is why you have issues with gameplay, which is why they can't do as many grand sweeping changes as FIFA or NBA can on a yearly basis. So that's something to keep in mind. But that being said, I don't think 2K is the kind of developer or publisher to leave money on the table. So we will probably see one. It just may not be at launch.
And the other thing to note is there was also a listing for Destiny Comet on PS4 and Xbox One. Now, this is not a new Destiny game because they're not going to do another one for a few years at least. But this will likely be the equivalent to Destiny, the Taken King Legendary Edition, which came out a few years ago, which had the first expansion as a code included with the game. So it's just a rebundled vanilla copy of Destiny with the first expansion. So what they usually do is the expansions are either $30 or $40 each. And the base game loses value. Like right now, it's in a humble bundle, in the humble monthly bundle for May. So it's reached that stage already. This will likely be a $60 release, which will have the first expansion which just released and the base game together.
No, that's where you're a bit mistaken. So when we look at Destiny 1 and Rise of the Taken King, it was Rise of the Taken King plus two other early expansions that released with Destiny 1. So it's three expansions with the base game. Now, what's probably going to happen is Destiny 2's first expansion was Curse of Osiris, which hit a couple of months ago. The second one just released now called Warmind. So there is most... And the thing is, Comet, in past leaks, had referred to the third DLC in the Destiny franchise.
Okay, my bad.
So there's a good possibility that we might see a compilation, like you said, with quote-unquote Comet plus Warmind plus Osiris. Or just the first two at this stage.
It could also be just the third one, because that's how some of these publishers work. Because they at this stage, the base game has lost all its value and you need to invest in the DLC. And with the original Destiny, there were three retail SKUs. The first was just Destiny. Then there was Destiny, the Taken King Legendary Edition. Then it was Destiny, the Complete Collection. And neither of these had any of the DLC on disc. It was always the base game. So yeah, that's how... There will be a new Destiny SKU, basically.
Yeah, definitely. And what's interesting is, at the time of recording this podcast, despite all the negative publicity around Destiny 2 and its lack of inventiveness, it seems that the game has jumped to number 5 on most played on the Xbox One, which is amusing considering it has a marketing deal on PlayStation and PlayStation gets a few extra features like a new strike that's exclusive to the PlayStation.
Right then, so the games we've been playing this week. What I have been playing is basking in the glory of my Nier Automata Platinum Trophy.
Now the one you paid for.
Yeah, the one I paid for. I've just been doing that. Haven't played anything else. But I plan to pick up Mass Effect Andromeda after this. I think I'm about like 70% or 80% through the main story. I think this weekend I should be able to finish that. Anyway, Mike, what about you?
So, been playing Overwatch again, surprisingly. A few people, including someone on this podcast, convinced me to try it out again. And yeah, Overwatch improved a lot. At least Bridget and Moira are good. Even though Moira looks like a Battleborn character, fun to play. The new maps are good. I say maps because I hadn't even played Blizzard World until
Chuck,
like
all that.
Now.
When are you buying that Mercy skin? You tell us that.
Probably in a few days, but yeah, we'll okay. be buying it. I'm disappointed that you have to buy it once on each platform. And like, despite owning Overwatch on all three platforms, it should have been like when you buy the Blizzard virtual ticket, you get skins across everything in one purchase. So it should have been like that. But yeah, was hoping it would be Widowmaker because, like, you know, I thought Blizzard had good taste. But been playing Overwatch, also playing Death Road to Canada on Switch. It was originally on iOS, Android, and PC, and it's won quite a few awards on mobile and all. Really, really fun game.
Which
nice
platform are you playing it on? Switch, yeah.
Yeah, it just got a big patch also today as of this recording, which fixed the icon. Icons are very important on the Switch. And it has a very nice rendition of Johnny B. Good, the classic song, as the menu music in a retro feel. So besides that, what else have I been playing, which is interesting? Nothing really, just Overwatch and yeah, that.
Yeah, in my case, I've been playing a lot of State of Decay 2 on the Xbox One X. And how do I put this?
You are in a state of decay.
The game is in a state of decay. The frame rate is, I mean, this game shouldn't have launched as a $30 or 2000 rupee purchase. This should have been free beta.
And just to clarify, you've been playing this on the Xbox One X.
Yeah,
it's the world's most powerful console.
6 teraflops, bro. I mean, jokes aside, yeah, it's, I mean, the frame rate's all over the place. Doors are when you go to a door to open it, it's already open, so you hit it and it opens again if it glitches, essentially. And when you shoot zombies, they clip through the wall. It's in a very poor place. But that aside, and it's tragic because the core gameplay is so much fun. You essentially the objective of State of Decay 2 has you corralling survivors of a zombie apocalypse as you bandy together and create a community, hijack outposts, build farms, create watchtowers.
Sounds like The Walking Dead.
It's actually pretty cool because a lot of it's procedurally generated and it's a lot of fun because your choice of starting character is different for each person. So you have like 4 or 5 different character types to choose from. So I ended up choosing someone who's a Halo champion. So the shooting skills were really good to start with. And his partner in crime was his friend who always messes up. And there were other options like a couple who found love in the zombie apocalypse and are inseparable. So they're cool mini stories based around the protagonist you choose. And the gameplay itself is really fun. I mean, once you disregard the fact that it looks like absolute garbage, there's actually a fun game there, which is tragic because it could be a lot more and a lot better. But as it is, I mean, it's fun. It's got a few interesting elements, like there's a time-based system for which it takes things allows you to build stuff. So if you want to, let's say, upgrade your command center or build a farm, it'll take a set number of in-game minutes, 5-10 minutes, whatever it is, and that lets you go out into the world in the meanwhile and, you know, take on quests, helps other survivors. And it's got some really interesting zombie types, some really, really fast zombies, some really big and powerful ones. And the weapon variety is pretty cool. The gunplay is actually pretty solid. But again, if you can look past the fact that it looks like absolute garbage, yeah, it seems interesting. We should have a full review on the site sometime this week.
And just to clarify, recording this on the 15th of May.
There we go. So by 17th, we should have a review. Yeah. That aside, I've been playing this game called Shin Megami Tensei Strange Journey Redux.
Never heard of this.
Did you steal my 3DS?
No, I didn't. It's actually pretty cool. It's it takes place in a future where a secret expedition has been sent to Antarctica to investigate a mysterious thing. We'll go thing called Schwarzwelt, which is basically this pocket realm that just appeared out of nowhere. And there are demons. You can negotiate with demons. You can get demons to join your party. It's really cool. It's kind of like an adult mature version of Persona. And despite it being a 3DS game, there are liberal amounts of blood too.
Yeah, wasn't there a Shin Megami Tensei Switch game announced last year at
E3? Yes.
It wasn't announced at E3, it was announced before that.
Yeah, sorry, at Nintendo's Switch conference where they unveiled the Switch, yes.
Yeah, and then it was revealed to be Shin Megami Tensei 5, which was a follow-up to the 3DS exclusive 4 and 4 Apocalypse. And Shin Megami Tensei 5 will likely come out maybe in the next few years because that's how Atlas is. So, yeah.
Yeah, so it's actually a lot of fun.
It's a remake of a Nintendo DS game, which is one of the historically hardest Nintendo DS games for a lot of reasons. And
Yeah, they've kind of fixed a lot of the issues there. I mean, it isn't as random or painful to play. And the conversation system actually lets you skip a lot of combat. So it's a lot of fun. It's interesting. It's a lot of fun. So we've been playing State of Decay and Shin Megami. Been playing a bit of Overwatch as Zenyatta because, you know, the rest of the people I play with don't like healing other people. Sup, Mike. So yeah, basically been playing those three. Looking forward to the Overwatch anniversary event. That's from May 22. But basically that.
We're back after the break to talk about Deadpool 2, where I'm joined by pop culture nerds Akhil Arora.
Hey, everyone.
Royden Serejo.
What's up?
And I'm your host, Pranay Parab, but you already know that. But before we proceed with the discussion, I'm going to, you know, tell everyone who's listening to this podcast that we are going to be revealing some spoilers a few minutes down the road. I will let you know before spoilers are out.
Yeah, we'll give a big spoiler warning.
Yeah, but for now, it's a no spoiler podcast. So don't worry if you care about that sort of a thing. I certainly don't. I mean, I know who dies in Infinity War and I haven't even seen that movie. So anyway, so it is a nice segue, Deadpool 2 from the first movie. I really like the fact that they kept the core narrative intact. But I'll start with something that I did not like, which is my favorite characters were once again, you know, sort of in the shadows. I like those three though, that Colossus, that Negasonic teenage warhead.
Yeah.
And to some extent, I like Vanessa, who's Deadpool's girlfriend in the first one. So I was just thinking that I sort of rewatched a bit of the first Deadpool movie before seeing Deadpool 2, and I remembered nothing about Vanessa. I had completely forgotten her, and you know what happens in Deadpool 2. So you know, let's just say that she doesn't have much of a role. So it's sort of disappointing.
Which is like the first one, right? She was always in the background. Like she was an element to the movie.
Yeah,
but she wasn't really a part of the narrative.
Yeah, exactly. And
but
like,
she did get a lot more screen time in the first one.
Right.
Yeah, but I mean, the character is essentially a cardboard cutout, right? Like a basically a prop to sort of show that, okay, Deadpool has some kind of a purpose. Maybe they did it intentionally, but you know, I was disappointed that both, all these three, Colossus also like barely has any role in either of the two movies. Yeah, and same thing with that Negasonic teenage warhead.
Yeah, she even has like a lot less than Colossus this time around.
Yeah.
I think last time around, from what I remember, you know, it's been 2 years. I think Negasonic and Colossus were like probably on par with screen time. But this time around, I think Negasonic is much less than...
Yep.
She's probably just like... it's almost like a cameo role, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like...
It might be frustrating for some people because like there are a lot of people who are like really fans of like Negasonic and Colossus and thought it would be a much more team movie this time around. But clearly that's not the case as we have now seen.
Yeah, I really didn't like the fact that, you know, they showed some 10,000 mutants in this movie, but they did not show a single scene where Negasonic is unleashing her proper power. Like, why is she a teenage warhead? Because she has some massive, you know, damage-dealing abilities, right?
Yeah.
And they don't show that at all.
And also, the bigger problem is it's always the secondary character. It's never the main character.
Mm.
The main character here, even though Deadpool is such a boundary-breaking movie, Deadpool is still a white male. Like, that's not going to change. It's still men. Like, I was noticing at some point, which we'll get to in spoilers more, that the main characters are always, like, white male who have, like, really deep scars in their past and they're doing something. Just like, okay, when is this going to stop?
Yeah, and that supporting character who's Asian, Yukio, does not have a speaking role. Like, hardly says three lines in the movie.
Yeah.
It was the same
high
lines.
Weight,
the
high
same
weight,
line.
Weight,
yeah.
High weight, by weight. That's
it. So that's...
And she literally shows her power once in the movie. Literally once. I'm not like... It's not like I'm miscounting.
Yeah.
And that was in the trailer. That's it. So if you saw the trailer, listeners, then that's it. You've seen Yukio's role.
Yeah, well, I guess she's probably the only person that Deadpool wasn't mean to or didn't make fun of in the entire movie.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, that high weight, by weight gag was the only thing, right? And that's not really sort of poking fun at anything.
Well, another disappointing thing was the other supporting characters who you think would have a much bigger role, right?
Which we can't get to yet.
Again, that was a huge bummer. I mean, I was waiting to see them in action and, you know, see sequences with them.
But that's what Deadpool is, right? It's like kind of taking that super, as I said, and then undercutting that by not giving you what you want from a traditional superhero team.
Yeah,
that's true. So, I mean, we'll get to spoiler territory in a bit. I'm like sort of dying to get there. But anyway, like before we get into all of that.
Dying to get there.
Yeah. Before we get into that, where does this movie sort of stand in the whole canon? Like, I do know that they make maybe 10,000 comic references, like reference to the comic series. But they don't actually show like whether this movie fits in the MCU, whether it's a part of that whole other...
So it obviously doesn't fit in the MCU because Fox is still not part of Disney, even though the deal is in the works and that is still on the US regulator. So we won't get to that. But it is part of its own like Fox canon of, you know, the X-Men sort of universe.
Mm.
The three X-Men made by Bryan Singer in the 2000s and then the ones made in recently, the First Class, Days of Future Past, The Terrible Apocalypse, and the new upcoming one in 2019. Mm. Which is why, so there's also, again, we'll get to it. I mean, I don't know how to avoid spoilers right now, but yeah, it sort of takes place in that zone of those movies, and that's where it takes place. And even though that's why the movie makes references to Logan, that sort of, in a way, it's cheating because Logan takes place in the future after Deadpool 2, but obviously Deadpool is, as we know, he knows he's a character. He knows he's a comic book character, so he knows the things that are happening in our world. So he's actually referencing the release of Logan in our world. He's not referencing the events of Logan that take place in his world in the future, which is very confusing, but that's how it is.
Yeah, and I also felt that like so many of these references where he talks to the camera, like so many of them, the meta references which he makes fun of like DC a lot of times. Right. You know, I really enjoyed all of those.
Especially the Martha one.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were a lot of references, not only to like movies, but a lot of different...
Stranger Things, don't forget.
I don't know if you guys watch, I don't watch it anymore, but Riverdale. There was another reference to Riverdale. The Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Sabrina, that's
from Riverdale, sort of. That's going to be a new show on Netflix soon, yeah.
Yeah, and so that
like,
also...
They don't stop at all, yeah.
Oh yeah, the references were a lot
Stranger
more, like every second...
Every
second sentence has a reference to something.
Yeah,
which is pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, it is cool and in a way, but, you know, it also hurts Deadpool 2 as a standalone movie. Because if you're somebody who's just basically been living under a rock or doesn't really follow English movies much, heard something about Deadpool 2 and you went to the cinema, you will miss about like 50% of the jokes in there, 50%
that
of the
is
references.
True. Yeah.
And
it hurts Deadpool 2 in the sense that what is the movie about? If I take those references out, I'm obviously reaching a point where you can't like talk about Deadpool because Deadpool is half the character is of sort of those references.
Mm.
But if you take those references away from him, what is the movie trying to say itself? Like, I don't think the movie really has its own message or themes that it's imparting. And it's very on the nose about it.
Yeah.
There is a message towards the end of the movie.
Yeah.
And like the movie knows that it has not done any legwork to convey it. So literally Deadpool just says it in a voiceover.
Yeah. And that's sort of been like the way Deadpool hides, right? I mean, in the first movie also, it's the same thing, right?
Yeah.
Remember the last scene of the first movie where like before the music starts playing, there's some, you know, a really emotional scene and then he says cue music and then the music starts playing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So things like that. But it is a really cliched scene, which Deadpool also mentions. And
yeah, that's what it is. I think Deadpool is better in the sense...
Yeah.
Sorry to cut you off.
No,
Deadpool is better in the sense that they do the cliched superhero action adventure movie stuff. But at least they're aware about it.
Yeah.
Compared to some other movies, like I would mention, like in the same universe, X-Men Apocalypse, which does the cliched stuff, is like really gritty about it, and is not aware, self-aware about it. Or like Batman Superman, the movie that Deadpool 2 mocks quite often. It's not aware about it. It's being gritty because it wants to be gritty, and it's not able to have that gravitas underlying.
Characters so dark, they might be from the DC universe.
Yeah, those one-liners were epic.
Yeah, but yeah, I feel that this movie should be able to stand on its own 2 feet, and somehow I don't think it really will be able to do that. Yeah, I mean, Deadpool is fun. Yeah, the narration is fun. The breaking the fourth wall thing, I really enjoyed that. But like I said, if somebody who's not seen any of the other movies doesn't know what DC universe is, doesn't follow much of MCU, it's not.
Yeah, at some point, I think it will start getting old because there's only so much you can pull off a movie based on just these one-liners and jokes, right? I mean, if you see the plot of it all, it wasn't the main plot
and
really.
During the movie itself, like,
there are
time periods in the movie where the movie like goes into a non-joke sort of period because they can't afford to make jokes because they're trying to be superhero about it, right? And that in those periods, the movie like that does show signs of just being another superhero movie, but it's cliched shots with its cliched like palette color tone of it, the way the superheroes are presented, the cliched even shots of how the scenes are filmed or how the scenes are even happen. Like it's an American movie after all, right? So the movie cuts with every throw of a knife or every bullet. Like they don't have the audacity or even the sense to carry the action scene in the way someone like say Jackie Chan in a Hong Kong movie would. So like they're not groundbreaking in that sense, but at least they're groundbreaking in some other sense. Although, they, as Rodan said, that will eventually get old as well. So you have to keep reinventing yourself on that front.
Yeah, and also, like, if you think about it, like, once you strip the humor away, it's just a really cliched and crappy plot, right? I mean, in which superhero movie have you not seen this? Like, superhero's girlfriend slash wife slash mother slash somebody close to him is killed, and then superhero goes into complete rage mode or self-destructive mode and tries to save the world at the same time.
Yeah,
even the first one was that, right? Like, he has a disease, and he goes into an experiment, comes out with superpowers, and his girlfriend is kidnapped, and then he needs to save her. That's it. That is the plot. If you take away all the fourth wall-breaking scenes and all the humor lines, that is the whole plot of it, and it's not that interesting.
Yeah, it
also
is actually...
the action scenes which I was talking about, they're quite generic. I was talking to Royden, like, during the movie itself, like, how Guardians of the Galaxy, like, Volume 2, or, like, even the first one, or, like, Avengers, they try to have something which is you haven't seen in action sense before, right? Like, in Volume 2, I remember Yondu's fin, the way it cuts through everyone. And it's set to a background song as well, just like how Deadpool likes doing its action scenes, right? They take a very nostalgic background sound and then they set the action scene to it. But there's no inventiveness in the action scene itself. There's inventiveness in the sense that there's a good background song to it, but the action scene itself, or what is happening in the action scene, is very cliched and generic.
Yeah, so that's something that we've seen in many movies. You remember that hero Quicksilver, who was sort of there briefly?
Fantastic Four.
No,
he was in the first two X-Men movies.
Yeah, so... Just one of them, I think.
No, sorry, only the second one, Days of Future Past.
Days of Future Past. So, like, that hero used to run around, like, really fast and all that. And, like, there was a scene where, like, Time in a Bottle was a song that they used. And he's just running around and, like, attacking a bunch of people.
Yeah, when they went and saved Magneto from the bunker.
Yeah, so... Yeah.
I'm saying twice class. Because they appeared... No, he came in Days of Future Past. He got Magneto out. And then he appeared in Apocalypse as well, where they repeated the... They repeated the old technique and it was very stale.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is a technique that you've seen, like, you know, multiple times. Yeah. So, that's once again something that they leaned on. So, I think, now we are ready to move into spoiler territory.
Yeah, I think we should.
Especially when we have suggested them, so many of them in the last few minutes.
Yeah, so
even
really
tried
sorry
to...
if something got spoiled. Like, you know, Gadgets 360 is not responsible. Don't come to us. Don't write to us, whatever. Anyway, so from now on, spoilers follow. Stop listening if you care about that. If you don't care about that, if you're like me, continue. So,
Deadpool dies.
Who multiple times. I mean, you know.
Oh, he tries at least.
The name of the movie is a spoiler, man. Deadpool. He's not a live pool. Anyway, so hated the fact that they had to start with that really cliched, oh, my girlfriend died, oh, I'm so sad. Yeah. And then also hated the fact that he goes into that afterlife phase and she tells him your heart is not in the right place.
I was so excited.
Yeah, I thought that was going to be like a joke. Like,
yeah,
you know, I was waiting for when the punchline.
This movie is called Deadpool. I really thought that heart in the right place would be that as his body rebuilds, the heart is actually in a incorrect place, right?
It's not
between his lungs. That was the practical joke I was expecting for 2 hours, and they never paid off on the entire thing. Why? Like, heart is in the right place, heart in the right place. I was like, okay, you've said it so many times, this is clearly like foreshadowing, as he Deadpool said once. I'm foreshadowing literally to us breaking the fourth wall,
I
and
think
they
that,
did not go through with it.
I think that entire scene was there just so that they could show Ryan Reynolds' face at the end, you know, in the entire movie you don't see his face. But yeah, did not like that. But well, the humor was amazing, I guess. I really liked the fact that every single scene in the movie is pretty much like quoted with some joke or the other. Even when he's getting beaten up badly by Cable, who's like the big reveal of the movie, I guess.
Yeah.
So yeah, what do you guys think about Cable? Or do you want to go first?
I think he's a pretty cool character. Josh Brolin has done a pretty good job in playing that character. As far as, I mean, obviously in the beginning from the trailer, you sort of get a sense that he's not really the main villain in the movie. And again, even the main villain over here, so even the end, there wasn't like a big, the fight scene was pretty cool where all three of them team up. But apart from that, there wasn't any real like big showdown that, a satisfying showdown at least for me.
That's
between
lack,
Cable.
Right? Like
the like,
action
yeah, there
scenes
wasn't,
are generic in this movie.
It was quite generic. And you know, like the slow-mo stuff and the background nostalgic soundtracks and all were all cool and all. But at the end of the day, I guess there was something missing. I mean, it was a fun movie overall.
Yeah.
Definitely worth a watch. And
it's
definitely
enjoyable.
As good, if not slightly maybe better than the first one.
Deadpool 2 is one of those movies which like Hollywood has been making a lot of recently in terms of superhero stuff especially. Where the movie is really fun moment to moment.
Yeah.
Or like at least some moments, like even if some moments lag. So it's fun overall when you like leave the theater.
Yeah.
When you start thinking about it, the movie sort of just hollow. Like it doesn't really have the gravitas of something like say Black Panther or something like Avengers Infinity War. in at least certain moments with the weight it carries. Like that happened to me with Thor Ragnarok. The movie is Thor Ragnarok obviously is much better than Deadpool 2.
Yeah.
If I was to compare, which I'm not going to go into here for reasons. But the movie itself, like because the movie takes its matters so lightly, like the plot is dark, right? The plot is also dark here. Like his girlfriend is dead. He's trying to like take revenge and also like sort of find a family, which is the same lesson everywhere. Like Guardians of the Galaxy, Fast and Furious, now Deadpool 2. It's the same lesson that it's not the family you want, it's the family you get, which is the people around you and the people who are working, like you work around. So that lesson is obviously very old. And also, what was my point? I forgot. So Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 did that. And Deadpool 2 doesn't like, is able to follow that. So like Thor Ragnarok and Deadpool 2 had the same problem of having a really dark plot. And because they treat it so lightly, you're not left with the gravitas of a much like say grittier movie at the end of it.
Yeah, that's true. Mm. Like I do see where you're coming from on that. But what I did not like especially was that the entire plot was totally cliched, that saving that boy thing from doing evil things. So like, have you guys seen the movie Looper?
Yeah.
This movie was
a much better movie.
Yeah, this Watching movie this. Was a complete ripoff of Looper. Like, if you look at the plot, what happens is in Looper, also, sorry for the spoilers, but this is spoiler territory, whatever.
I mean, it's not a spoiler. I mean, Looper is quite an old movie now. Old, yeah,
so Looper is based around this very thing. Like, there is a kid who eventually goes on to become some kind of monster, destroys some person's family. That said person comes back in time, tries to kill him, and eventually, fails. And
the hero sacrifices himself.
Yeah, the hero sacrifices himself.
In that sense, they did it much better. The hero, had the reality of that this is how it's going to happen, and the only way to stop is because the hero is the same, right?
Yeah,
it's the older self of him. And here Cable is a different person than Deadpool.
Yes,
but here it's the same guy.
Yeah,
and that's why he kills himself, because he's killing the other guy.
Yeah, and that whole like what do you call that teddy bear thing, that scene where like the teddy bear was coated in the dried blood of his daughter and his wife, well, that teddy bear changes to a fresh teddy bear in the current timeline after he's come back all the way from, I don't know, 50 years in the future. That didn't sit right with me,
but the only thing is what happens is it fits in with the Fox Marvel canon though, because they did the same thing with In Days of Future Past, where Wolverine goes back and like changes things, and it continues in that timeline.
Yeah, so even if you want to do that, you can do it in a much better way than the cheesy teddy bear. Look at it, it's fresh now. Yeah. There's no dried blood on it.
I think with Deadpool is right, because like the only movie way the movie like carries on is by undercutting these things with humor.
Yeah,
and there's certain scenes it can't possibly undercut with humor, because then you lose the emotion of that scene.
Yeah,
so that scene with teddy bear, or the scene where he finally walks across the water wall and kisses Vanessa.
Yeah.
Those scenes you cannot undercut with humor, no matter how much you want.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you lose the emotion of that scene.
Yeah, and you think about it, right? This Fire Fist, he becomes this fearsome villain or whatever. Mm. So if you stop that from happening, maybe Cable's daughter never really bought that stupid teddy bear, right? I mean, she could have used some
anything
other
toy.
Maybe Cable never became Cable. Like, why is it guaranteed that Cable loses arm?
Yeah.
Because then Cable is in the future, right? So why is... At least, what I don't know how did he mention years?
No, I don't. I don't think
he didn't mention how many years.
It looks quite futuristic, so I'm gonna guess 50, 60 years, which means Cable is not born in the timeline that Deadpool is.
Yeah,
right?
And also
which means
not
that Cable might not end up getting a cybernetic arm.
Yeah,
he might just lead a normal like life with his kid.
And if like that teddy bear has changed, then so could so many other things, right? Like Cable became Cable because of his experiences.
Then you mention a butterfly effect, like so many things can happen.
Yeah, so if that has changed, these things also will change, which is like a huge plot hole, right? I don't think they really account for that.
It's not. It's a convenient way for them to keep Cable in the time, right? Because they want to make future movies with Josh Brolin as the character.
Yeah.
So they're like, okay, how do we not send him back to the future? Okay, let's kill Deadpool and then let's have him save him instead of meeting his family. Why would Cable choose that?
Say what you want. Ultimately, like, I think the likes of Fox, Disney, these are like really safe, family-friendly studios. Even though, I mean, whatever happened in Infinity War, I am very sure they're going to write it in the next movie.
Yeah, they're going to reverse most of it in the next movie. Yeah.
Because
they have to.
That's what happens in the comics. In the comics, what happens is in Infinity War, like the whole thing begins with Thanos like using the Infinity Stones to like sort of destroy half the universe, and that's how the Avengers even come to know that okay, something is wrong and let's go fight this guy. Who is he?
Yeah.
So it is going to happen in the next movie.
Which is
Infinity
what like
War.
My like sort of emotional like my like, the experience was while watching Deadpool 2. Like when he dies, I'm like okay now he's gonna be
come back
from life. Now he's gonna come back. Okay now he's back.
Yeah, they delayed
like,
it too
it's
much.
It's just like delayed
it.
Like you know it's gonna happen because these characters are so important to it, especially when the movie is called after the character.
Yeah.
Which is why when they dispatch a secondary character, as they did so amazingly with that whole X-Force scene where they literally killed off everyone except Domino.
Yeah.
That was fun because like those characters you know aren't essential to the movie, so you can enjoy those scenes.
Yeah.
When you kill off like the main character, then you have to like really otherwise like sell it. like Logan did, because then you know it's the last movie Hugh Jackman watches Wolverine, then it's a gravitas, because you know it's never going to happen. But when you do it for Deadpool 2, when you know there's going to be at least a Deadpool 3 or an X-Force 1, then I'm not going to like be convinced.
Yeah, and even like Cable's line of saying, I'm going to stick around, which is like hinting towards his own, probably an IP of his.
Yeah, they missed a chance to say that, yeah, I'm going to stick around because the studio signed me for 4 movies.
Yeah.
Which is like another thing which I feel like I've noticed that Fox and Marvel don't do. They don't let their sort of villains or very serious characters become funny, but they only let the other heroes let be funny. So like Domino and Deadpool will all use these humor lines, but like that's why Josh Brolin as Cable, or Josh Brolin even as Thanos in Infinity War, he never gets the funny lines, which I was really surprised. And like sort of that's why I really like Last Jedi. That's why Rian Johnson, he mocked the villains, he went to that extent, which is why some fans are really angry about it, but he went to that extent, which these movies have never sort of reached.
Yeah, that's true. Like, I'm actually quite disappointed overall with the way the movie sort of turned out. But yeah, I will also say this, that if I was not going in there thinking of like a podcast or a review after this, then my impression would have been completely different. So the important disclaimer here is that if you're going there just to enjoy a film and you don't really worry about like the plot holes and where the Marvel Cinematic Universe is heading eventually, even though this movie is, you know, not yet joined into that, then yeah, you're going to enjoy this. Like, it's a fun movie. Shut your brains, enjoy the humor, like watch it. And yeah, Dopinder is amazing. If you're Indian, you're going to love that.
Oh yeah, he has a much bigger role and a much more badass role this time.
Also. Yeah.
And we should probably mention this before the spoiler warning, but it's too late now, that it's not as bad as censored this time in India.
Yeah.
Compared to what Deadpool was the first time around, this is so much better.
Yeah.
Like they kept so much of the gore and violence I did not expect them to keep.
And
like
swear words.
And the swear words. Like the first time it happened, there was like genuine shock in the audience, right? Yeah. They were like, oh, they are allowed to say that, the F word. Mm. What is happening? Mm. How is this happening? We are so excited now.
Yeah.
And the first time, then Deadpool like is blown to bits. I'm just like, okay, this scene is gonna get like half cut, and it wasn't like cut.
Yeah, it wasn't.
I'm sure like there were some scenes where there was a lot of gore and violence that were chopped off, but it's just so hard to tell because there were so many quick cuts in the action scenes.
Mm, yeah.
But I mean, there was one word that was censored, which you will find out once you watch the movie.
3 or 4 times it was censored. Yeah. And obviously, we can't say it on this podcast, but yeah, it is censored.
But apart from that, I think there was very little.
The bigger F word.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess. Okay. It's not family.
Yeah, it's obviously not family. This family is not bigger than the F word.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So, I think there's time for only one more thing, which is your favorite thing / character or superhero, or you know, anything that you liked in the movie. Why don't you go first?
Yeah, I think I would say going with a scene, my favorite scene was when Deadpool gets his bottom half of his body blown up and then he is regrowing, but it takes time to regrow, and during that period there's like a really really cool scene which happens where he's got basically toddler feet and there are many references to many classic
things.
Movies
also
mentioned over there, which is something you should watch out for. And plus the part where he says, I'm Batman.
He didn't try the voice though, which is probably because Ryan Reynolds couldn't pull it off. But he did say, I'm Batman.
Akhil.
Yeah.
I think this is going to sound like sort of like diplomatic, but all the fourth wall breaking moments were like the favorite part of my movie. Like every time he like, not just like actually breaking the fourth wall and talking to us, which was very obvious at times, but just like even casually mentioning like, say, Patrick Stewart, or like the Martha things, or saying Brown Panther at the end, or like all these small moments, other things I'm gonna like remember eventually, because those are things you will call back, right? Those are things you will mention in casual conversation with your with friends and everyone, and that's why you will remember the movie. Like the plot, as we said, is generic, the action is generic, but those are things that will like sort of makes Deadpool 2 or like a internet culture like conversation driver.
Yeah, so I'm gonna cheat completely and I'm gonna pick 3 things, not one. First is obviously Domino. Was my favorite superhero of the lot. Clearly she doesn't have any like special powers except for being lucky.
She's lucky.
Yeah.
That's amazing special power.
Yeah. So that sort of, you know, creates these crazy scenes where, you know, even the likes of Juggernaut are attacking her and, you know, she's escaping constantly, and all the things, how they just go for her. You know, it's like me on a good day. So yeah, I like that. And secondly, my favorite action scene was that scene where they take down Juggernaut finally. And you know how they...
Oh, that part was censored actually.
Yeah, I mean...
It was.
There was a cut there where he like puts that cable, you know, in the wrong place.
Right. In a not very pleasant place.
Yeah. I mean, Colossus puts the cable, which is a light electric wire. Cable. Yeah. Yeah, not the cable. Yeah. So the way they take him down, that was
sensitive.
But it wasn't exactly clear whether he died over there or whether, like,
no, he didn't, because at the end they show him getting out of the water. So he's gonna come.
Getting out? I thought he was still splashing about.
No, they show him getting out.
Right. Yeah.
So no one dies, as this is a superhero movie. So they have to save everyone,
like,
for the sequel.
Safe studio, right? Ultimately, they can't kill, like, even the, like, what's her name? Vanessa is not dead.
Anyone
die? She's dead, but she's not dead.
She's on an astral plane.
Yeah.
No, forget that. But, like, even, like, this, if we talk about the second post-credits scene, like, they could just use that and be like, okay, that was part of the story, and they can bring everyone back.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Like,
the post-credits scene was also one of my
favorites. Is that, like, happening as part of the movie, or is that happening as just a joke the directors and writers wanted to write about?
Yeah.
Because otherwise, he goes to Negasonic Teenage Warhead.
Yeah.
He makes, like, puts new fuel in the, whatever that means, I don't know what that means, in the time device, and he brings back Vanessa. Like, so which is the joke and which is that everything?
So I think they were all a joke. It starts off, like, being serious, like, oh wow, he has actually done that, but then it slowly gradually goes to, like,
I think they should have made it more clear that it was a joke. I mean, I get it, this is Deadpool 2, so
that's why they had it in the post credit scene, right,
but, like, maybe if they could have done it in, like, a, you know, how the credits credits were in a drawing, like a child's final drawing format. Maybe you should have done the scene in final drawing format.
I don't think anyone would have paid attention. Yeah.
That would just have a clear distinction, though, because they can easily use that as a retconning of the story and be like, oh, Vanessa's back.
Mm. Yeah, but in the post-credit scene, there was that one serious thing, right? That whole Wolverine.
Yeah, the first post-credit scene.
Yeah, like, it was basically clearing the timelines, right?
No, that's the second post-credit scene.
Is it? Where he went and killed the original.
Yeah, that's the second one. The first one is where
he
gets the
time.
Right.
Yeah, I got that order.
So I thought it was, like, serious until, like, you know, he was reversing timeline and saving Vanessa. But as soon as he got to the whole part of killing his old self, who is mute in the Wolverine timeline. I'm just going to call it Wolverine timeline.
Yeah.
Or the part where he kills his Green Lantern self. Yeah. I thought that eventually convinced me that it's, like, they're joking.
Yeah, that, I mean, I can see the distinction there, but it's not extremely clear.
Exactly, which is why it's confusing.
Yeah, anyway, so the final thing that I liked was Dopinder. He finally joins the gang of superheroes.
Yeah.
And the actor is Karan Soni. So I really want to see, like, where that goes. Does he end up becoming a mutant, or, like, is he just one of those, you know?
I think he's more like Peter.
Yeah, more like Peter, but still has
Peter
a role
to play. Peter
survives,
though, at the end. But again,
that's
a joke. So he doesn't really,
scene,
he doesn't actually survive.
Like, they're confusing everyone. Like, are you actually reversing the plot? Are you doing an Infinity War sequel, or are you actually, like, not?
I think it was like Looper and Infinity War combined into one movie.
It's actually a lot of Looper. Like, when you talked about it, I was like, okay, that's completely, like, stolen. Like, I would not say stolen from Looper, because there's so many movies that go down.
Yeah, they did
path.
It, but Looper did it in a much more
smarter way.
Yeah, but this one was, well, I was. I mean, if you think about it, like, from a critical standpoint, trash. But if you think about it from, like, just, you know, enjoy
Two
the
hours
movie.
Of enjoyment, then
entertainment, then you get your money's worth.
Depending on how much you spend.
Yeah, and also you get to hear an Indian Hindi song. So don't miss that moment. All right then, that's all we have for this episode of Transition, and we will see you with another episode next week. As always, don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube and Instagram at Gadgets360. If you have any questions, comments or feedback, do write to us at podcast@gadgets360.com. The music for this episode comes via Magnus Solai Paulsen, whose album PPP PPP is where the tracks are from. Thank you so much for listening.